Okay, everyone, welcome back to Dad Space. I have with me yet another dad, which is exciting. Glad to have my guest on today. We're going to have a great conversation around, raising kids, family life, talk about living with our spouses and how we can do a better job at that. Kyle Goodnight's with me today. Kyle, welcome. Nice to have you here on Dad Space.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
It's amazing. Well, I had our little pre-chat, which was fun. And we got to talk a little bit about what you do and who you are day to day work-wise. And I have relatives and friends that serve and do what you do to some degree. Can you let people know what your regular daytime, nighttime / everyday job is?
Sure, not a problem. I appreciate you, saying that. Thank you so much. It's something that we don't really, us first responders don't really, we hear it all the time, but it doesn't actually sink in until you talk to people that have family members that are in the service. So I'm a full-time paramedic. I do come from a pretty extensive background in the medical field in general. I started out as a respiratory therapist back in 98. So I did that for 12 or 13 years and then became a medic and did both of them for a little bit simultaneously, along with dabbled in medical sales. But now I'm settled in as a full-time paramedic on a 911 service in my local community. And what I do within that is wait for mayhem to happen. I also train our department. I'm part of our training staff. There's six of us that go out and train the whole department on a monthly basis. And I work in conjunction with those six people, our medical director and our training staff, and bring out information that we need to get our continuing ed and all that stuff. So wear a couple of hats even inside of the realm of being a paramedic. But
amazing. Yeah, I just there's such a need, I think, to recognize people who do things like this for us and serve us in this way. And I know from talking to friends and family that this can be a very tough and trying position to be in. And there's a lot of times where you come home, and I know we talked about the human relationship with your wife and what she does, that there's just times where you just need some space to not talk about it. You need to think and process. But at the same time, you do need to talk.
Decompress.
You do need to share. And you need to have people around you that have your back. So who is it for you that you go to beyond your family? Is there someone in your life that you kind of have that relationship with where you can kind of talk about this stuff?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you asked that question. It's such a great question, because I think it is so important for us as first responders, whether you're a police officer, a firefighter, a paramedic, a lot of firefighters share the role. I'm only a paramedic. The one that goes really unseen and who's getting the most increased in depression and suicide rates is the person who takes the call. So we put them in our first responder realm now, the actual dispatchers. So there's basically four tiers of first responder. So asking that question of who I go to, I want everybody to hear that they need someone to go to. Whether, a spouse is one thing, I get it. But you need someone else that knows exactly the world you're in, whether that be a ex-coworker. I call on my ex-boss, one of the guys that helped me through a possible divorce in the middle of all this. Divorce rates of first responders are 75%, and that's probably being generous. So, it's one of those things where when I faced my turmoil and my possible divorce, I called on a couple of close friends, but one of the people that came and I was actually working for at the time, he would show up about every couple of weeks to my station and just say, "Hey, let's go for a walk. Let's have a conversation." And he was a mentor for me on the first responder husband world, not as a paramedic that day. And I owe a lot to him of my focus on repairing my marriage and doing my part to repair my marriage back then. I am lucky to say that I saved it so far. We're 23 years in. We'll be 24 next year. So far, 12 was when this all happened. And we spent 2 years riding the ship, not only myself and some changes that I had to do within myself and within my family, within my husbandry, if you will, my fatherism, all that stuff had to change. Different things had to change to make it work. And my wife also did a lot of work for herself. She's in the healthcare field and had her own stressors and her own times where she needed to come home and decompress or have another ear. So, you know, that person for me, one of multiple people I have that I can call upon and say, hey, listen, had a bad day. I need to talk about this above and beyond talking to, you know, my wife. Another one is, and I've always stayed very, very close with my supervisors, my chiefs or what have you. I've been in a leadership role before, so I kind of gravitate to the leaders. You know, when I worked in the hospital, I had a few different leadership roles and in charge of certain things and, you know, training new employees that came in. So I'm in that. I don't have a problem with going to the leaders that I trust and the people that I feel could be a mentor for me and telling them just that, hey, you know, I liked what you do. I liked the way you got where you got. I would like to, you know, follow in your footsteps, maybe. And maybe I don't want to be a chief someday. And I don't know if I really want that realm, but at least I want the leadership skills from that. So I bring those people into my fold, and I'm an extrovert, so I have no problem with asking for that, because you don't get anything you don't ask for, right?
Yeah.
So I've talked to multiple leaders of mine. I actually have another chief who used to be was a lieutenant for a truck. Then she moved to captain. She was my captain for years, and we had a lot of deep conversations during that time. And then she became our chief, and now she's on to another chief job that is not in my system, but I have no problem hitting her phone number up. Hey, I need to talk to you about something. She's right there on it. She knows that she's a mentor of mine. And it's weird because I came into the EMS realm a little late to the party. So I'm actually older than most of my supervisors by a good stretch on some of them. Some of them I'm close, but it's one of those things where, yes, I am calling on the younger and wiser, or people that have been doing it in a leadership role more often. But yeah, absolutely. So I have two or three people that I can call on upon that. I do have my wife, she's very understanding. I do have my kids now. My kids are both, you know, one's 18, one's 21. We have never shied away from our jobs with them. We discuss things, not in detail because of HIPAA laws, but we talk to them about the things we see. We talk about the things that can happen. We're not helicopter parents, but we definitely share the world with them that we see, for the most part. Almost any of the big things that, you know, overdoses, you know, car accidents, you know, any of that stuff, mental health issues, don't keep it in. If you've got a problem, come to us. Don't be afraid to come and talk to us. You know, I may not be happy with what you have to say to me, but I've got to listen. That's my job. I'm going to approach it that day. You come to me, you tell me something that you don't want to tell me. I'm going to approach it kind of like I do professionally and just listen and put my listening ears on and not my judgmental ears, because our kids need to have that ability at no matter what age to be able to come to us and say, hey, I've got a problem with the way you're treating me. I've got a problem with something going on in my life. You know, I don't want my children to be passive around me. I don't want them to be afraid of me. I want them to be able to come and tell me anything, you know, I've even had hard conversations with my kids and say, hey, listen, I don't know your spiritual, you know, I know what we raised you as, but if you have problems with our spiritual life, if you want to change it, don't be afraid to come and talk to me about it. I'm easy going, you know. I mean, I've changed my thought process a few times over the years on spirituality and who I want to follow and who I want to be a part of, you know. So I'm not going to judge you for that. Another thing, if it comes to this may take people a little off guard, but I told him, I said, in today's world, there is so much going on with the LGBTQ community. Don't hide anything. If you are thinking of different, you know, lifestyles, don't be afraid to come and talk to us. We may not like it. We may not be approve of it. We may be totally fine with it. We don't know. We may understand, like, finally, you're your true self. I don't know. I don't believe that, but I've given them over the years when they got old enough. Now, remember, you don't talk that way to a 5-year-old.
Yeah, it's a little different. You
know?
Yeah.
Like, they have to be understanding. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not one of those things where I'm going to go approach a 10-year-old about, you know, life choices, even though some of that stuff's going on in the world. But with my kids, age appropriately, as they grew up, I talked to them about certain different things when it came to life decisions and life thought processes. And the main, including with my wife, the main story of that is, tell us anything you need to tell us. We'll deal with it on the back end. We may be upset there. You know, if you come and tell us that you did something bad and you're going to get in trouble for it, there may be consequences, but guess what? We've all done stuff wrong. We've all had consequences. You've seen me get pulled over to get a speeding ticket once. You know, I'm like, if you got a speeding ticket, you come and tell me.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. You know, it's like, you know, just don't be afraid to come and talk to your first and your, I mean, basically, parents should be the very first mentor that kids have. And it should be the most important mentor until they get to a certain level where we can't help them anymore. My son is in media productions. I got him started with some mentoring in the beginning because I am a voiceover artist as well. I didn't mention that earlier, but so I do voiceover and I have audio set up and I do video and stuff like that. So he surpassed my knowledge really quick, probably the first semester of his high school version of dealing with that. But on the other hand, in the beginning, I mentored him with that. So I was his first mentor in that. My daughter is in healthcare right now in the middle of, she's a pharmacy tech pharmacy technician at Ohio State University, and she is also in pre-nursing in college. So her mother, who is a nurse, and myself, who's been in the hospital field, we were her first mentor to get this type of path once she mentioned that she may want to go into nursing. Hey, there's options out there that you can kind of get ahead of the game. And that was the pharmacy tech program. So we truly feel we were our first. We were the first mentors for our kids. Now, when my son got into marching band, I have no idea about percussion and reading music.
Yeah, right.
So his mentor for that was, you know, was Craig Dunn, a wonderful percussion instructor. So, you know, it's one of those things where to teach them up front that we can not only be your parents and mentor, but how to recognize when other mentors are out there in the world that can help you through the next phase of your life.
And it's interesting how we grow. As our kids grow, you know, we are at the beginning. We are everything to them. They're helpless. They need everything from us. And then as things grow and as they mature, they need less of us in that way, right?
And that's tough too, because sometimes you're like, I need, you know, like we're going out to dinner tonight with my daughter. We haven't seen her for a whole couple of weeks. You know, she's in college and we're lucky enough that she chose a close university to go to. And we were very surprised because it was Tampa or Ohio State. We thought for sure that Tampa and the beach was going to overcome, but it didn't. I think she likes football way too much.
There you go.
Bucks.
And you had no influence in that at all. No, I like that.
Yeah. No, you know what? If it was an influence, I did tell her. I mean, we were bluntly honest because we went down to Florida for a cheerleading competition. She was a competition cheerleader for multiple years. And so we'd go to Florida every year for her big summit, you know, whatever big competition. And we were down there. We're like, hey, let's go in a day early. Let's go ahead and take your mom to Tampa. She had not seen it yet. I had seen it the year before when we went on a college visit with her, with my daughter. And mom had never seen Tampa. So she was actually kind of against it. And then we got down to Tampa and we looked at Tampa and their program and their building. And we had a graduating nurse take us around and show us everything. I mean, they laid out the red carpet for us, right, for my daughter. She was pre-nursing there too, already accepted. And so she did a deep dive and we ended up doing a deep dive at Ohio State a couple of months earlier. So I was like, I've given you all the ammunition you need to make a choice. I don't care where you go. I want what is best for you. I didn't even follow it up with, well, you know, I'm still a Buckeye. It was 100%. And I told her, I'm like, do not stress. I mean, I know you're already stressing yourself about this. You do not need my added stressors of wanting you to, and I don't even know if I want you to stay close to home. Like part of me wants you to grow a little bit. I mean, mom and I, Jen and I have a little bit different thought process on that. You know, Mama Bear still likes the ability to pounce if she needs to quickly. And Tampa's a little bit further away to pounce. But, you know, on the other hand, she understood that, you know, we raised our daughter in the cheerleading world. They become very mature very quickly because they're around older kids from the get-go, because you put these little girls on these teams that can be thrown up in the air with bigger girls that can do it. So you automatically, it was one of those things where there was a lot of investment with that. And it was hard at times. And it was frustrating at times, certain things that happened in the cheerleading world to parents. But on the backside of it, every single moment of that cheerleading experience was something that made her who she is today. She's a strong, independent gal. She's very well beyond her years of maturity, in my opinion. Does she still make mistakes as an 18-year-old or have doubts? Absolutely. She is not a CEO yet. But these people that are in the cheerleading world, there is no doubt that they are athletes. trust me when I tell you, I did 2-a-day football practices and I would not want to do what they do.
No. It's amazing. And I love seeing kids find their spot, find their groove, and find right. their path in life. That's always rewarding as a parent. Your relationship with your wife, we talked about this in our pre-chat a little while ago, that things, and you alluded to it already, things weren't always roses and everything perfect in a marriage. And I think there's a lot of people that could benefit from hearing your insight on how you've navigated your relationship with your wife and some of the lessons you've learned along the way that could help other dads listening today, wherever right. you feel comfortable going with. But I'd love to kind of to get your learnings and your insight on maybe how we can show up better for our partner.
Right. And I totally agree with that. You know, do I do it all the time? Do I show up as the perfect husband every single moment of every single day? Absolutely not. I mean, I procrastinated on doing some stuff she asked me to do just yesterday, you know, for weeks. And then I finally did it. It was just like, but so we've got that kind of thing going on. My wife and I, we decided early on to have at least one common thought process. And that was when we raised her, we both wanted kids. I was 28 when I got married. She was 26. So we were past all the partying and all that stuff from college or post-college for the most part. We did a little bit of that in the beginning. We weren't married long before we knew that we both wanted kids pretty, you know, she was 26. That time is click, you know, ticking. You know, she knew that as a nurse. So she wanted kids pretty early. So did I. That's one of the reasons why I married her, because I watched her be a nanny for a whole summer one year. And I'm like, that's it. Yeah. She's the one. Look at what she does already. And she's 19, 20 years old, taking care of these kids. That's what I want for myself. You know, I want a family like that. How she treated them and how she took care of them. So early on in our relationship, we both agreed that we need to agree on aspects. We can't play the mom versus dad role. We can't do that. So no matter what it was, even if I disagreed with it, we would follow suit. And then we would talk about it later away from the children, right? At the time. You know, I remember one day she came home with my son underneath her arm. I opened up the garage door and I saw her with that fire in her eyes. And she's like, I want every single one of his toys thrown in a trash bag and taken out to the trash right now. I said, yes, ma'am. I had no clue what happened. I wasn't with her. They left happy and go lucky. They came back with fire in their eyes. Carter was screaming. You know, Jennifer was hot. So I started going down and she sat him down and watched me put every single toy in a trash bag because of his behavior. And we took it out to them. We didn't throw it away, but we made him earn it all back, you know. But we later on, after everything calmed down, I was like, hey, what happened? You know, and she's like, she told me all the stuff that happened. I'm like, oh, yeah. I said, we were very appropriate on that decision. You know, like, you know, it was about a toy at the store. And, you know, she warned him and he threw a fit and we had to do some major, he's probably scarred for life. I don't know if he's scarred for life, but he definitely remembers that day, even at two, or I think he was three actually. So he may remember that day. So, I'll have to ask him, but either way, we were on the same page, right? And we've done that throughout, you know. I think as they got older, we may have a little bit difference of opinion now that they're older and they can think for themselves and they come, you know, when my daughter was in high school and she'd want to spend the night on a snowy night with friends or something like that. I'm like, well, Jen, I mean, if I can drive her, you know, I mean, if we can get her there safe, you know, what's to say we can't let her go and have fun with her friends? And it wasn't defying her or going against her. It was just say, hey, let's think about this in a different direction. Or, hey, let's think of an alternate where we all are pleased. You don't want her to go out and chance it driving in the snow because she's a fairly inexperienced driver. I'm okay with it if she gets there safe, you know, let's come up with a compromise. So later on, as they got older, we started doing a little bit more stuff like that, but it wasn't good cop, bad cop. It never was good cop, bad cop.
Yeah. I like that.
So,
because you,
And then when it comes to your other part of your question, when it comes to the marriage, you know, being there was a couple of layers, and of course, raising kids is always stressful. But then you add the fact of nursing life and first responder life and hospital life, you know, the schedules. We would literally pass the baby sometimes in the hallways. We worked at the same hospital for a few years, and we would pass the baby. Like, I'd come into work, with the baby. She'd be getting off work because she worked night shift, and we'd pass the baby and we'd hand off the baby, and sometimes in the middle of report.
Wow.
So, yeah. So luckily we worked at the same hospital, just opposite shift. So you got to think there was one day a week we were off together during that time. And most of the time one of us was sleeping because trying to catch back up on night shift, day shift stuff. So, you know, that put a stress on it. You know, I was approached one morning when I got off duty that she wanted out and she wanted to end the marriage. Like I said, in about 12, as I mentioned earlier, and it changed a lot of things. The prioritization of my family, of my relationship with my possibly soon to be ex-wife, everything had to change. I had to make sure that we could co-parent together. That was part of our major discussions after the first initial hit of the want, you know, wanting to leave. But ultimately we worked it out. It took, you know, I committed myself to figuring out however long it took. I told myself early on, and this is what I would ask all men out there that are looking at the same possible, you know, ultimatum, is 2 years. Say, is 2 years really that long of my life? You know, we go to high school for 4 years. We go to college for 4, 5, 6, maybe 6 years, depending on what your career is, or, you know, how lazy you are in the beginning. But, you know, if you 2 years is a blip in the map of my whole entire 23-year marriage, it's a blip. I don't even remember the first 2 years of my marriage.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, so, and now that I look back, you know, now we're 12 years ago when this all happened for 2 years, you know, 21 to 23 years ago, you know, 10 to 12 years ago when this all happened, 2 years was nothing. I committed to 2 years of, well, first of all, I'm trying to right this ship. I want my wife to right the ship as well. I know it takes two of us. You know, there's four things that can't happen during a recovery. We got a very good couples counselor that was, they were Christian based, but they didn't beat the Bible during our lessons. They were just based in a church, but they were very open to just whatever. So I would strongly suggest anybody that's looking for couple counseling, as long as you're comfortable with it, being at a church and you know, tell them up front. We told our guy up front, listen, I'm Christian, she's Catholic. We don't need to have the Bible thrown at us in our relationship. You know, we want to come to you. We've heard great things about you. And he's like, totally understand. And he goes, and same, right? He goes, I don't even know if I'm going to have you next week, because I've got to make sure that you're a viable family, you know, partners that I can either help come to an agreement or help, you know, fix their marriage. One of the things he said on our very first message, and this is one thing that I've shared with a lot of people, and now that I've got a platform, is maybe it'll go viral, hopefully. The four, and this was all from Joel. He gets all the credit, not me, and I'm sure he got it from someone else. So, but it's the four ugly horsemen of a marriage: act of adultery, act of abuse, money laundering, for lack of better terms, hiding money, not being truthful with money, and any type of mental health issues, from as little as depression to full-blown schizophrenia. If you have any one of those four in a marriage and they're not being dealt with, or they're not being confronted and brought to the surface and trying to fix them, you will not survive that marriage. So was there active adultery? I don't know. Not on my side. I don't know. I don't think so on her side, but I don't know. I didn't want to know. Was there abuse? No, there was zero abuse between either one of us. Was there money hiding? Nope. We were pretty open with our, you know, our poor ass being, you know, healthcare people. We don't make much money. We just make ends meet. We save lives, but we don't make as much money as the guy typing into a computer and making graphics, but I digress.
Right.
But, and then when it comes to the mental health part, was any one of us dealing with a mental health issue that was not being dealt with, that was not being treated, whether that be medication, whether that be counseling, whether that be admission to a substance abuse of some sort, anything like any of the mental health categories, if they weren't being dealt with, if they were being ignored, nope, that's not me, it's not going to work. So, you know, was there some depression? And we were probably both depressed. We're going through a possible divorce. We're probably a little bit on the depression side, but luckily there was no major mental health issues, no bipolarism, anything like that. Not to say that you couldn't make a marriage work. It's just those four things have to either, one, be expunged from the situation, or being dealt with.
Yeah. To have any of those hiding, in the closet and not be able to, and not know. That's the one thing, right?
Right.
When the partner doesn't know that the other one is dealing with this or has dealt with this or whatever, that shows a little bit of lack of communication, maybe a lack of trust, possibly, in the relationship.
Exactly.
So those are great points. I've never heard them described that way. So,
yeah, it blew me away when Joel spoke of that with us. I was like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. When I look back at the people I know that got divorced, what was going on? They were having an affair and they weren't willing to give it up. They were in an abusive relationship and they weren't willing to, you know, they weren't willing to leave in the beginning. And then finally, with fear of possibly dying, they finally get out. Or, you know, oh, well, there was, you know, somebody was spending so much money on a credit card and they didn't know. And now they're in financial ruin. And then, well, wait a second. Then there's this whole other layer of mental health. I'm like, that makes so much sense. I have a friend of mine in Chicago. Her husband was a major, major mental health case, and he ignored it all and he refused to get help. And they did not survive their marriage because he wasn't willing to go get help. You can't fix anybody. You're not going to be able to fix someone's mental health issues. That takes professional, that takes time, that takes active working on a mental health issue, no matter what that mental health issue is. Like he said, as little as being blue and depressed could be a factor. Because if you're constantly depressed over your whole entire career of your marriage or your whole entire, time frame of your marriage, you're not giving what you need to give to your side of the marriage, and you're not being there for your spouse.
In many situations, you're in that relationship, you're only there to get. You're not there to give because you have this this need that you need help with, but you're not there to show up to help your partner as well. So interesting perspective. Right. As all this was unfolding in your family, how were your kids responding to you and your wife?
Well, we went ahead and, another great question. Once again, we came to the table after the first initial shock of, oh my gosh, she's leaving me. It was, okay, what's next? She's like, I want to move out. I'm like, please don't do that. Please don't move out. The financial burden that you're going to cause on this family if you move out. I am willing to back off. I will move out of our bedroom. I just built you a brand new house, 4 years earlier. And I made it big enough where we can have loved ones stay here, right? So, and stay here for weeks and months. I've built this so we can, and I did build it. I designed it, and I'm also a handyman, and I've been in construction most of my life with my father. So I did build our house. I mean, I had some subs that came in, and I had a contractor, but there was a lot of the house that I built, including the design of it. So 4 bedrooms, a bathroom in every bedroom. So you could bring in a loved one and could live with you. And I'm like, I can move in the spare bedroom. I don't even have to go sleep with the kids. I'm also a first responder. I leave every third day for 24 hours. I'm like, there's no reason for you to go get an apartment, just so you can get away from me. We can be roommates, and I can give you your space. I am willing to do that. There was a lot of, I don't know how much of me was the problem, but if it was majorly me, if it wasn't stuff that was going on inside of her, or if I was the problem, I have to be a better husband to this one or the next one. Like, period. I don't believe my mom and dad survived their little hiccups. I come from a strong marriage background with my family. She comes from a strong marriage background with her family and extended family. So it was one of those things where, okay, what am I doing wrong? What can I fix? Let's be humble enough to say that I could be the problem. Maybe I'm all of it. Maybe I'm some of it. Maybe I'm half. I don't know. Let's focus on me for a while she's trying to focus on her. Let's see if we can go our separate ways, stay in the same house, but then merge back together eventually. Luckily enough, that's what happened. So I focused on myself for a while, right? And then I would sprinkle in focusing on, the fact of kids and being a husband and being there properly. I read several books that are very important to read, as any newlywed needs to read these two books. Any pre-marriage people needs to read these two books. And if you're married and you haven't read these two books that I'm getting ready to mention, please do yourself a favor and read these. One is the 5 love languages.
Yeah.
It's a given. You have to understand. If you don't understand love languages, you will have problems. Love, that book is so groundbreaking, and it's so true. She is not a touchy-lovey-feely person. She is a acts of service. That's one of the love languages, acts of service. I do things for her and she feels love towards me because I do that. Same thing. When it comes to the second book, that is called, it's written by the same author. It's called The Five Apology Languages. If you understand the five apology languages, I've used the five apology languages in business, in my career. I've used it above and beyond my relationships, right? And the concept of the five apology languages is you may have to apologize in a way that uses one of the five love languages.
Yeah.
So that's why they're in good tandem. So that is, I have no monetary success from that. That is two things that I read during that time frame, during those 2 years, amongst other things, that really, really resonated. And it should be a prerequisite for all marriages, period. Because if you have those two concepts down, you're gonna be years ahead of dealing with problems and subjects that come up. Long story short, that was a long side thing about your question about the kids. Because we were on the same page with them. As soon as we thought we were truly going to be getting a divorce, we got the book. You know, there was a book out there that in their age appropriate range talked about mom and dad getting a divorce. So we sat down with them, we read them the book, we asked them questions, we told them that this is possibly how a new family would look like. We would be, you know, in different places. So we were upfront with our kids, just like we had been for years when it came to our jobs and what we see and what we do, age appropriately. Yeah, yeah. You know, when it came, you're not telling your 6 year old, you know, everything about the trauma you just had.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or the abuse you just saw come into the ER. You know, you age appropriately, talk to them, and then when they get older, you can share a little bit more of the trauma that we see, you know. So that's what we did. We didn't sugarcoat it. We talked to them about it. We agreed not to argue in front of them, of course. We did have a Disney trip planned, and we decided I still wanted to go to Disney. She did not want to go to Disney, which is really weird now because she loves Disney now. Not that this trip made her love Disney, but I said, you know, listen, let's just go to Disney. Let's go to Disney as co-parents. Let's make this our first dry run in the happiest place in the world at the time. You know, let's go make this a dry run to show our kids that we can be good co-parents. You know, we're already sleeping, and I'm sleeping with Carter and you're sleeping with Camden in your respective beds like we do when we travel. So, you know, that's just what we did. And I said, we're not there for a romantic getaway with you and me. This is a family thing. Let's just show them, you know, a co-parenting situation that is strong and poignant, you know. And we went to Disney and we came back from Disney. And that's when the needle really started moving, because I think doing that and having that commitment from the both of us to show our kids that we could co-parent, I think it sparked something in both of us that maybe we should just work on this a little bit longer and actually follow the help that we're seeking.
Interesting. Wow. That's okay. For your kid's sake too, that's the one thing, like I know, I remember when I was little, I can remember my parents sitting at the kitchen table, filling out their will. And I'm like seven or 8 years old. Right.
You did that early.
And my parents are sitting there writing out their will. And I'm like, what's this? And they explained to me.
So smart.
And I freaked out as a child thinking, you're dying.
Right.
They're mm-hmm. like, no, we're just doing the will because, you know, we need this. And
accidents happen.
I was traumatized by it because I thought this was it.
Wow.
And it wasn't. But I just, that was a moment in time. And I know that there's been moments in time for me as a parent where I know that if I react in one certain way, this moment in time will always be framed in my reaction, and my children will remember my reaction to that moment, whether it's bad news, a mistake, whatever.
Good news.
But they'll only remember how I responded. So I have to sit back and consider that in how I respond to anything that happens. And I think your kids benefited from the way the two of you responded in that moment and demonstrated that we can make this work. And that was the frame.
Right. And we were never perfect. I mean, we are not the Jesus of parents.
Right? Yeah.
Right. Who is, right? we did make mistakes in responses at times, but we learned from them and try not to do it again. That's important. Or you take that breath, your 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, or your okay, personal timeout thought process and say, okay, let me think about, let me take a breath. Hey, I'm you just told me something. I need to take a skip. I just need to take a skip to let it sink in. I don't want to be reactive. I want to be understanding. So, when it comes to that, you know, we were pretty good for the most part on all of that. You know, like I said, we weren't always perfect, but at least what we did do is that if we weren't perfect, we would come back and readdress it with them.
Good.
I think that's another important
thing. I love it. Any other things you've learning now coming around 24 years? That dads can pick up on maybe a new dad or a new husband. Anything that you can kind of give some insight to somebody new to all of this?
You know, new to all this, just remember, I mean, I remember how much my dad gave of himself to my mother. And I'm not even as good as that. You know, I think I'm not as good as my dad, how he gave himself to my mother. Like he was, at least when I grew up, I'm the youngest of four and I'm 8 years away from my closest siblings. So they have a different parent group than I do, period. That's a whole new generation. That 8 year span was a whole new realm for them. They learned on the first three kids of how to be a parent properly. I was lucky enough to get the benefits of their mistakes. Right. And same thing with even with two, you know, there was mistakes we made with Carter that we didn't make with Camden. And Camden, as only 3 years younger than Carter, sometimes she saw some of those mistakes and was like, well, I'm not going to repeat that. You know, so there's a big factor. That second born child has always got a little bit better than the first born when it comes to working their way through understanding parents and parents understanding how to be parents. But when it comes to us as men, you know, if you're a selfish person and the marriage is all about you and you can't understand why it needs to be about the both of you or the kids or the family realm, then you really need to check yourself. Not to say that you won't get it fixed inside yourself, but go to actively try to fix that. If you don't understand that you're selfish and people tell you that, boy, you're pretty selfish about this, you know, get some clues from your surroundings. No one does everything perfect. Do I do things in my business realm that it takes away from my family? Absolutely. But it also provides for my family. My goal is to provide for my family. So there may be some things, and especially when it comes to the EMS world and being gone, there are things that I have to commit to that, yeah, I don't get the chance to go to that or to be a part of that holiday because I've got to go serve my community because that's my commitment. Same concept when it comes to trying to grow a business. You know, when I dove into becoming a voiceover actor, I took time away to go get training. I tried to do it while Jennifer was at work and the kids were at school. I tried, but then there were certain times that I'm like, I have to go to this meeting or I have to be on a call or I have to go record. And I know you want to have dinner, but I've got a deadline. You know, I follow it up with trying to give that quality time instead of quantity time when I've been pulled away from the family for whatever reason. And I actively say stuff like, hey, this is going to be a tough week. You know, these next 2 weeks that we're in right now are going to be a tough week. My wife's going on a girl's trip. As soon as she gets back, I go on a guy's trip. And there's going to be 2 weeks where we're not together. We're already split apart because of new, you know, going back to college for the kids. So we will actively come back together at the end of all of this and go have a nice dinner and it'll be quality and we'll make sure that we do something fun or go, you know, whatever. So we plan those things. And that's one thing that we've done through the redesigning of our marriage is that we do a lot more family stuff and make it and put a pin in it that this is what it's for. We're going to dinner this night because of this celebration of your accomplishment. You know, my daughter getting her, you know, a pharmacy tech license when she finally got that. Hey, we're going out to dinner for this reason to celebrate you. You put in a lot of hard work and we haven't been able to do a lot of fun stuff together because you've been working so hard. So we label things and we actually will say, hey, this is the dinner. This is the trip for these sacrifices that we've done.
I love it. That's great. I think that's one thing we need to do more of is celebrate those things, keep them top of mind, and then just create space for each other. You know, I think that's one thing that we can all do better. And I think as dads, that's one thing maybe that a new dad might not anticipate or a new husband might not anticipate is how much they're there to give as well. So, and I love the idea that we talked about that. And somebody told me this early on in my as a husband, that no matter what, if someone has a problem with you to some degree, you're part of the problem. It could just be that you're there, right? You're physically in the room. Right. They have nothing against you, but
yeah. Right, why are you yelling at me? Because you're the only one in front of me.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, bring it on. As long as I know it's not me, right?
But accept that and try to figure out how you can help in that situation, right? How you can be there.
Right.
And the other thing someone always told me too was wherever you are, be all there. And I think that's what we can do as dads, as husbands, is when we show up and we get home, it's been a long day, it's been a long shift, it's been a long week. We walk through the door, we need to be all there. We need to show up for our family.
And that definitely, and I had a breakfast meeting this morning with someone that does stuff in the mental health realm for first responders, which is something that I'm working on, that I'm committed to, that I'm actually going to start. I'm in the middle of building my first responder mental health course right now, above and beyond all the other things I do. But I'm utilizing 100% of my resume, the fact that I'm a voiceover artist and I can record quality audio and give a message, you know, properly and with emotions and stuff. So everything I've done in my life is working to what I feel now is a purpose now that I've raised my kids to this point. You're always going to be a parent. You're always going to give them suggestions, but they're starting to make their own way and we're letting them do that. But you know, when it comes to coming home and being all there, there's things that we have to do as men to get us to that point that when we do get home, we're not carrying the load of the job, whatever that job may be. So on our drive home, we need to learn, we need to go and study, we need to go find out things that build our resistance and our resilience, right? Things that we can digest if we've had a hard day, that we're not just sitting there sweating over it. We need to have a, you know, I call it the PTO, the personal timeout. It's one of those things where in EMS, when we go into an ER, we have something called the EMS timeout. When anybody in the ER, as I bring in a patient, can yell out EMS timeout, everybody, it is a given. Everybody has to shut up, and the lead paramedic gets to give his report for 30 seconds about what's going on with this patient. And what they found is we've got better patient outcomes because of an EMS timeout. Okay, it gives us better communication with the hospital, and it gives us information about this patient where they don't know that patient yet. I'm the one that knows the most about this patient right now. Even all the doctors in the room, you don't know as much about that patient as I do right now for that moment. That may be a repeat or whatever, but I still know more than they do because I'm bringing them in. They haven't met them that day, right? So the EMS timeout is so crucial. So I've developed something inside of my first responder course called the PTO. It's called the personal timeout. And basically it's if you share this with your family, hey, listen, if I need a PTO, tell me, you know, hey, that gives me a hard stop. I need to think about what I need to pause. I need to, I need to think about things that I've built myself for resilience or things that I've done. You know, maybe I need to take 5 minutes and go do some breathing exercises. You know, maybe I need to do some tapping or whatever. There's all different types of mental health, you know, tools out there in the world. You just got to go learn them. So if you start your thought process on a slightly different direction with the PTO, and this is where your day was going to go, this is where your day can go. And it's going to be better for you and your family as long as everybody's on the same page and they understand it. Like, communication is huge. And that's where I'm trying to get to with you. You come home and you want to be all there. There needs to be some pre-communication about the ways that I deal with my stressful day. If I have to go work out, if I need to come home, pet the dogs, go downstairs and work out and blow off some steam, then that's just what I do. I'm really not home yet. I just want to work out for free, right? You know, so, or with the equipment in my house. So if there's communication that's expected, my wife, when she gets home, she just wants to take a shower. She wants to wash the day off of her. That's not only the germs from being a pediatric nurse, but she wants to wash all the stress away. And she comes home and she always asks, I mean, God bless her. She's always like, hey, do you care if I go take a shower? I'm like, absolutely not. This is your way to decompress. Good. Go take your shower, honey. You know, I'm not clean yet. Anything that needs to be done, we need to mop, we need to go mow, we need to, whatever needs to be done, I got it, you know? Just like if when I come home in the morning and I've got to do my decompression, if I haven't already done it on my way home, she knows that, okay, when I come home, I just need to like drink my coffee. I need to go maybe sit back down. If I had a late run, maybe I just need to go and lay back down on the couch. And she allows me to do that. You know, I just need to get a couple more winks, you know, and it's not, hey, this is what has to be done today. And boom, 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 boom. If I come home and I communicate with her, hey, was up all night. I know there's a lot of stuff to do today. Just write a list, leave it on the counter. I'm going to go back and get a couple more winks. Okay, no problem. She'll write it down. Sometimes I send her a text. I'm like, really? 45 things?
I love it. That's such a great way to end off. I really like that, Kyle. That makes me really want to stop and think about how I show up too, because right now I'm working nights and my wife works days and we're having this whole thing going on. So yeah, I think that's a great way to kind of have that understanding. And I love how you said that your weights at home are just free weights. It's a weight term, I guess. Free weights, and the fact that you can come home and just do that for free instead of going to the gym. You're not home yet.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty smart. That's a really good insight. I like that.
Yeah, if that's the way that you decompress, you know, if that's what you need, just communicate with your loved ones as long as the timing offers. You know, you got to come home and take your kids right to school. I mean, that's just life, you know. I mean, but know that after I drop them off for school and I do these errands, I got to go back and work out. I got to make sure I do it. I can't miss it. You know, I make it what do they say? It's not a I want to do this or a need to do it. It's I do this. We change our wording. And if we start changing our wording to, I need to go do this. No, 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 no. You are going to do this. I am going to work out today. I am going to treat my wife with respect. I am going to have a conversation with my wife today. Not, well, we need to talk. I think we need to talk. No. If you tell yourself that it is already basically been done, then it'll be so easy to make that choice to do it. Not even a choice, because it's not a choice. It's just, yeah. When the tones drop, and I learned that from Tones Drop. We call them the tones. When the bells go off to go on a run, everything stops. Everything stops. I mean, everything. And when I tell you everything, there's been times when we've, you're worked for 24 hours. There are things you have to do that are biological that you have to stop.
And you got to go.
You got to, in the middle of a shower. Yeah. We'll take the clean one where you're in a shower. There's no wash. I mean, I remember one time. I remember one time.
Yeah.
Sorry. Last story. It's a funny one. We'll end on it. But I remember one time. It was in the morning, and we got a run, and I was already ready. My lieutenant was in the process of getting ready. When we get to the run, you know, we jump, and I was in the back. He was in the front. Blah blah blah. So we get to the run, and we're talking to this patient, and we look up, and I'm like, "Dude, you okay?" He's like, "What?" I said, "You're half shaved. You're only half shaved." And he's like, yeah, the run came in right in the middle of shaving. I wiped the stuff off and I went on the run.
Yeah.
So when I tell you, so that whole, that stopping, mm-hmm. a hard stop is part of, I mean, that's a, you know, does that increase my adrenaline? Does that in the middle of the night give me a little jump scare? Yeah, absolutely. You know, but it's also trained me to have those moments in time where hard stop, let me think about the direction of this conversation, this situation, this day. And, you know, like even today, I had a great meeting and I was pulling up to an intersection and I was getting ready to pull out into the intersection and I didn't see a car coming. And I was like, I stopped. I whispered PTO to myself and I said, this is when it happens bad, is when you're in a great place or you're in a horrible place. It either starts or it progresses. If you're already in a bad place, it can progress unless you have a PTO. You know, if you are in a good spot and you're feeling great, I was feeling great. And I'm like, man, I almost pulled out in front of that car because I am so focused on the excitement from that meeting that so I told myself, all right, PTO, what am I going to do about this? How am I going to make sure that my day doesn't turn to crap? Okay, I'm going to go home and I'll take my dogs for a walk. I'm going to clear my head. I'm going to listen to some music and then I'm going to get on with Dave.
Well, wow. We need more of you, Kyle. So we're going to have you back on other podcasts as well. You got so much to talk about, and I'm thrilled to be able to connect with you and have you on the show. We'd be amiss to not do this as far as people connecting with you, Kyle. There's so much. I want to get into the voiceover stuff. I want to get into more and more. But as far as contacting you and being in touch, where do we go?
Easiest way is kylegoodnight.com. Goodnight is spelled with the K in the middle of it, like good knight in shining armor. Kylegoodnight.com. Yep. That's, you'll find everything you need to know about me there. There's my voiceover, my first responders stuff, my podcast. I didn't even talk to you about my podcast yet. I like myself. I don't have six podcasts like you, but maybe one day, I've got one and a new one that we're launching. So, that I'm launching.
We'll talk about that. We're going to have you on How to Podcast. We're going to have you all over the place and continue the conversation.
People are going to be like, oh my God, this guy again. No.
It's amazing. Everyone, please go check out Kyle's information in the show notes. Kyle, thank you for making time for me, and great insight. Great discussion. Really appreciate you being here and making time to do this.
I appreciate it. Appreciate you having me. Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, go check out all the information, everybody. And again, support Kyle. And if you need a voiceover person, come on. He's right there.
Yeah, give me a call. Yeah, give me a call. Yeah. I can get closer and I can get more intimate and I can have good conversations with people. And it's called
you're good. Good mic placement, good mic technique. You got it all going on. I love it.
Yeah, there it is.
Amazing. Hey, thank you for checking out Dad Space today. We'd love for you to head over to dadspace.ca. And if you would like to share your dad story, we'd love to have you on the podcast. Thanks for listening. dadspace.ca. Catch you over there.